Doodlings, she thinks of the mouse, her little worthless scribbles, tiny fruits, flowers, monkey faces, the occasional dragon topped with Chinma's head. These are the figures that almost of their own impetus bud and unfurl in the margins of Ilan's copybook these days. To her eye, these small pictures are inexcusably inexpert, just like that first grief-stricken sketch of Jinling was. More than once, appalled at how her pencil has mauled a plum, she's vowed to stop. And yet the little pictures keep coming in a process both addictive and mystifying. It's the same need that once drove Yulong to stay up through the early morning hours, coaxing peonies and fresh-faced peaches onto her cloth with her needle. But there is, she is discovering, something liberating about ink and lead. Unfettered by thread, she can bring the whims of her thoughts, whispering trees, wilting flowers, to life. When the images are inept, the solution is refreshingly simple. Yulong simply rips the page out and starts over. As more and more of her study time is devoted to art, she begins to worry as she hands Jamwa her study sheets. It seems impossible to her that he won't reprimand her for putting so little effort into them. To her astonishment, however, he doesn't even seem to notice the fact that the characters she once spent hours on are now dashed off in half that time, in half panic. He still praises her brushwork, the surprising delicacy of her execution, at least until one afternoon when he is home working in his office. Yulong is lying on his bed upstairs with her writing things. Lulled into a dreamy daze by the rain patter on the glass, she's thinking about the old French priest from their outing, about the deft assurance with which those meaty hands had captured a flower's frail beauty. That same feeling she'd had then, a thrill, blended with longing, fills her, and almost without thinking about it, she pages past the day's vocabulary in her copybook. Tongue between her lips, she makes soft, gray sweeps on the paper. She adds more detail, a faint line there, a smudge here, a dark crease to show the dainty fold of a leaf. The flower's flaws, its unevenness, the unnatural cast of the attempted shading, needle her, and yet she keeps on trying. On her fourth try, she takes a different approach. Instead of drawing line by line, she tries to tap into that flash-quick association between image and meaning that is the key to her growing literacy. Orchid, she thinks. Orchid. And without letting her mind go any farther, she puts her lead tip once more to the paper's surface, and when she is done, she shuts her eyes and then opens them again. To her surprise, what she has drawn is just that, an orchid. It's still a bit crooked, a little chunky in the stem and stamen. She'd do better if she had one right in front of her, and yet anyone looking at this picture, a schoolboy, a child not yet capable of reading the word even, would know it for what it was. Flushed with victory, she is just turning a fresh page to try it again when Jamwa flings himself onto the bed, almost on top of her. "Aha! Caught you," he cries, nuzzling her neck. "You didn't hear me come up, did you?" He pulls her, copybook and all, into a rough embrace. "Those old sons of turtles are crazy," he complains. "There's no way in hell we're going to be able to check all small craft in the harbor before they reach the docks." "No way, certainly," she says into the lime-sweet pomade of his hair, "if you don't ever leave the house." He pulls back slightly. "Ah, you do want me out," she laughs. "Of course I don't." Snaking her arm out from under his weight, she tries discreetly to drop the book over the bed's edge, but he catches her hand. "Not so quickly. Let's take a look at your work, little scholar." And still pinning her beneath him, he parts the book's pages. Yulong feels her face flush as he looks at her image, and then at her. "Did you do this?" he asks. She nods. Jamwa rolls off of her. Bending over the book, he begins paging through it intently. She watches him take it, the scrawled off characters, the little pictures that she thought were good enough to keep, the not-so-bad orchid and the one that looks like a lion, and the one that looks somehow squashed. But it's the good one he returns to, tracing the black lines with his white fingers, frowning at it, as though it were a puzzle. "I was having difficulty concentrating," she mumbles. "The rain." Jamwa doesn't answer, and oddly anxious, she chews a cuticle. When it stings, she looks down to see that she's bitten too hard again. Blood wells. "This is how you spend your days now?" he says. "I mostly do them after I study." "Have you had lessons?" She laughs. "When would I have lessons?" And then, realizing he means at the hall, she bites her lip. "No, never. I just try to draw things sometimes. I'm no good at all." He purses his lips. "Actually, you are. You're very good." And the compliment all but takes her breath away. "I'm no Shi Tao," she manages finally. "You can surely see that." "It's interesting," he goes on, ignoring that comment. What? Well, that you decided to do this. He points to where she's tried to show depth with clumsy crosshatch, a technique she'd seen on the cover of a magazine. None of the old masters would pay this much attention to depth. Well, I know. It's silly. Don't apologize. Artists, modern artists, should paint the world as it is, not just as some empty exercise in aesthetic. Turning slightly, he waves at the scroll that has hung in the room ever since before he first led her up to it.